If you've been listening to KUOW's The Record all hour, you heard about Seattle's new mobile medical van helping people on the streets. Now I'd like to introduce you to a man who used to be homeless. Eric Seitz left home and left his family when he was 16 years old. And he bounced around, traveling, couch surfing. Then he got into drugs, and his couch surfing devolved into living on the streets. At that point, Seitz figured he wouldn't live past 25 years old, and he was okay with that.
It was just a strange sense of kind of pseudo-contentment in what this position that I was in, and also just not thinking that there was any way to get out of it, having tried to do it many times before. So I just kind of thought that that was my lot in life.
Then Eric got a bad leg infection after injecting heroin there, and he very nearly did die.
I have the sensation of waking up, and I was waking up in Harborview in the hospital. I don't know how I'd gotten there when I woke up, because I saw my mom there that I hadn't seen in probably 6 months or something. And they told me that I'd been in a coma for the past month. And I didn't really know what had happened. So I thought it might have been an overdose. But then what they told me was that I contracted the flesh-eating bacteria there in my leg. And they said that it had pretty much destroyed all the flesh on my right leg in about one day.
Eric, you told me earlier that you had long since accepted the idea that you might not live past 25.
Yeah.
So given that, how did waking up from a near-death experience, what did that do to you? What went through your head then?
Pretty much since I had not had any complications with drug use before that, it kind of contributed to the fact that I kind of thought that I was invulnerable in some kind of way, or that like I wouldn't die, but I was fine if it did. But at that time, I had the realization that it had just gotten real. And I could see the look on other people's faces, and they were horrified. I did feel that I wanted to live at that point because it was such an intense experience.
How did that affect you waking up from a month-long coma and seeing your mom's face? You hadn't seen your mom in 6 months or so.
It was not really shame or guilt, but it was kind of some kind of remorse that I hadn't connected with my family, who I love very much and were always there for me anyways. I just wish that I didn't have to go through that experience to find myself. But I was actually pretty relieved in a way. I felt like I could like breathe again in a way, knowing that I had the support still, because there was all my family members were visiting me during that time, and I apparently had my 24th birthday in a coma, and all my family came in party hats and celebrated that. So it was definitely kind of relieving in a way, actually.
What happened after you recovered? You left the hospital.
Yeah, so I would assume, as most people would going through that experience, that that would be enough of a trauma to just not want to ever do that again, like almost dying. But I found out that death for me wasn't the bottom. And so I went right back out again after all that, and it was about $900,000 in the hospital bills and those months in Harborview. And I didn't even go back to the drug of choice. I went to something else. And eventually I did that. But it was just, I did that and tried to hide it for another month or two until it was pretty obvious that I had fallen down again. But it was just so dedicated to like still staying in that lifestyle for some reason, because that's all I really knew. And it was, you know, pretty horrifying to realize that I was willing to accept death again after all that experiences. And
yeah, we talk about people hitting bottom. It sure sounded like you hit bottom.
Yeah, sounded like it. But it was something else that I went through that really got me to have some introspection on what I was doing to other people as well. And it was something that my little niece said, and she was probably like 4 or 5 at the time, and she didn't really know what was going on, but she knew something was up, and she could sense emotional stuff like that. And so she came up to me and asked me why I didn't love her anymore. And that's what really kind of...
Why you didn't love her?
Yeah, she felt like I wasn't really paying attention to her or showing her, obviously, the respect that she deserved. So that was what really got me to think about it, and from that day on, I didn't use anymore again and really tried to do what I could to get away from that.
Why? What went through your mind when your 4-year-old niece says that to you?
Again, just like seeing how I was affecting other people, and I really loved her a lot, and Just the innocence that I saw there and her desire just to have an uncle in her life was really important to me. And I still had some kind of moral and value system set up that it was strong enough to get me to stop that. Like, obviously I didn't care about myself at the time, but I have a lot of empathy for other people and love for other people at least. And so that kind of held me together for a while until I could love myself again.
Isn't that interesting? You know, you might think that self-love or self-preservation would be enough, or seeing all those friends and family members around you, but it was that four-year-old little girl that kind of triggered something for you.
Yeah, definitely was. From that moment on, I didn't really have any cravings or obsessions about using anymore, which was strange. It was just kind of taken from me.
Really?
In a way, I don't know why. But, I mean, it was hard sometimes because I would think about it, but it wasn't, like, serious enough where I'd actually wanted to go back again. It was kind of some weird spiritual experience in a way.
What about the rest of your family? How did you rebuild that? I mean, you needed help, I would think.
Yeah, and luckily enough, I had that family support system there, which, I mean, the people that I was hanging out with a lot didn't have that, and so I could see how that would keep them out a lot longer. But when I asked for the help, I got it, which is very privileged for me. And I'm grateful for that, but that's one of the biggest contributing reasons of why I feel like I need to dedicate my life to giving back to those that are still in that situation.
Yeah, let's talk about helping other people in a couple of ways. For one, you are a nurse now.
Yeah.
Right? How did that come about?
That was just purely from the experiences that I had as a patient in Harborview. I woke up and I was always really interested in like chemistry and biology, even though I was never planning on doing anything with it. I just wanted to be a traveling hippie guy for the rest of my life. But when I got into that situation and I was the subject, it was just really fascinating to learn about how the body worked and how healing worked. And it was kind of a challenge to me to redirect my thinking somewhere else and my purpose somewhere else. And so that's really what started it.
As you know, we're debating and arguing over how to help homeless people. What would have helped you the most so that you didn't have to end up in a 1 month coma?
It would have been nice to have like some house, like supportive housing to go into that was at least covered for the period of while I was trying to figure out my stuff. A lot of people don't want
supportive housing, meaning
like subsidized housing. I mean, there's a lot of those downtown.
Plus counseling services.
Yeah, because I think that mental health care in Washington is appalling in a way. Just we have a pretty bad record for that.
How about a place where you could keep using the drugs you want, but supervised?
Mm-hmm.
Would that have been helpful or hurtful?
I think that would have been extremely helpful. I mean, I've had a lot of contact with the supervised injection facility up in Vancouver, Insight, to try and get some inspiration on how we could do that down here. And I've been a part of the conversation of doing that down here in Seattle as well. But I think those kinds of things, like safe consumption rooms, are something, again, like to keep someone alive long enough where if they want to get out of that or not, like they'll have that opportunity. And it's the same thing with homelessness, like giving somebody an opportunity to have the capacity to do something different.
That is nurse Eric Seitz telling you what it took for him to get off heroin and to find a stable home. So how does Eric think we can get better at helping people out of homelessness? For starters, he says, get out and volunteer. Meet the people who are living on the street and try to feel empathy for the people who are struggling around you.